You're listening to Mark Schneidman's Radio Real Estate. Our phone number is 564-1290 or 866-564-1290. Go to RadioRealEstate.com, RadioRealEstate.com, to listen to past programs and find real estate information. Call me after the program at 452-2428, 452-CHAT. Welcome back. If you just tuned in, you're about 30 minutes late. We start the program at 6 minutes after the hour, but thanks for joining us. I'm talking with Randy Sutton, Chief Title Officer at First American Title. We've got a couple more issues to cover here, and one of them, we all want to talk about elder abuse, but we had another claim story. We're talking about selling out or settling out and what payments are made, and this is something. What is a forgery story of an estate settled in the 50s? What's this?
Well, it's a classic title claim, really. It's one challenging the basic title itself, the ownership itself. And it stemmed from a case that had an estate that had been settled back in the 50s. A number of transactions had closed in the meantime. We issued an insurance policy to the current owner. In fact, some improvement started to happen. And the out of the blue, we get this claim from a person saying that when that estate was settled, the deeds and the waiver of my interest in the estate were forgeries, and I really am entitled to my third or half interest in this property. Our investigation of the court records and the public records indicated that there wasn't such an interest, but he persisted, and in fact, it went to litigation. And although there wasn't a settlement paid out per se, there were legal expenses, which add up pretty quickly, and we were able to defeat the thing, which is another point to bring up. Title insurance also covers legal fees, and they can add up really fast. So even if there is nothing on the record or some defect to be solved or cured, to get to the point where you're defending the issue, you can spend large sums of money in the legal fees.
Tens of thousands.
Easily. In a case we settled, another claim involving a missed easement. Now, that happens from time to time. We hate to admit it, but people are people and humans. And we can sometimes have errors occur where we, in our most diligent search, we're still managed to overlook an easement. And it turned out to cause some trouble for the new owner in regard to development of the property. And there was a claim made, and we settled by getting an appraisal done for the value of the diminution that would occur because of the easement. There was a dispute about that, and it went to court. It was stayed in court for a long time, and so we ended up spending somewhere, well, it was under 70 grand, but it was close. It was a boatload of money, and so it's not uncommon for claims to cost money, even though it's not a specific item that we're, quote, fixing.
Right. Just defending.
Just defending. It costs a lot of money, yeah.
We have a caller who, it's actually Roy, who's back for another shot at this trivia question. Roy.
Yes.
Hey.
Hi, Mark.
Well, what's the answer, Roy?
Well, I did have another cup of coffee. You're right. Maybe I've been awake too long.
And did you call Ed?
No, I didn't call Ed.
Okay,
he's probably not conscious yet. But I believe what I was trying to say was, I was going to say February 28th, but what I'm meaning is that the last business day of the month would be the exception where you could do all three of those actions on the same day.
Well, we're going to make an exception here and give you the prize, even though you you called in the first time and didn't get it. Congratulations, Roy.
Thank
you. One time. The one exception that's allowed is the last business day of the month. The county will allow you to fund and record on the same day. Roy, we'll get that out to you. Thanks a million
Mark,
for calling.
I'll split the pizza with you. Thank you.
Bye-bye. It's kind of an interesting thing, and it creates a real stress factor, and they didn't do a lot of special. Well, I guess particularly on Fridays.
Oh, yes.
When right before the weekend and someone wanted their loan didn't go through and something happened and they couldn't fund until Friday morning. You don't want to fund Friday morning, borrow the money, and then pay on it Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and then record on Monday.
Definitely.
Don't want to do that.
We had quite a few special recordings when they were allowed. Absolutely. We seem to be adjusting just fine, though. And the last business day, I mean, we have a few, but it doesn't seem to be as many as we used to when it was just a commonplace occurrence to have special recordings all the time.
It's a funny thing. Let's talk about this elder abuse. My guest today, Randy Sutton, Chief Title Officer at First American Title. Bob Bruss is an attorney, and he writes a column on real estate, and he gets a letter. About 3 years ago, when I thought I was dying of cancer, I deeded my home and acreage to my only son to save him from probate after I died. Well, let's just stop there. The answer didn't even address that. I don't think that's a good idea. You want to save probate, you put your house into a trust. And the old adage is the best way to acquire property is to inherit real estate. The best way to acquire property is to inherit property. So not a good idea. Her basis was to deed her land and her home to her son to save him probate. Well, she says, I survived the cancer. Chemo worked. She's in remission. Now I have a new life. I'm still living in my house. My son farms the acreage, and he and his wife live nearby. But now I want to move to like a better climate, Arizona, Florida. However, I don't have any money because I gave away my property. I could sell my property, but of course I don't own it. Naturally, my son doesn't want to give it back to me or sell it and give me the sales proceeds. What can I do? And I'm thinking, what do you mean naturally? What kind of family do you live in? I mean, and this should be addressing her problems. So either this woman has a son from hell, or this woman is mentally incapacitated, or something's going on. It's got to be one of the two. But can you imagine? Naturally, my son doesn't want to give it back to me. Man, happy Mother's Day. So he writes back, he goes, well, once you give away real estate, there's no way to get it back unless there was fraud, mistake, or duress involved. Your situation is a strong lesson to every reader not to give away real estate before death. And I'm surprised he didn't add, because he said this before, that it was a bad idea, even if he was a good son and he gave it back to her now, you really don't want to give it away. You want to keep it and have him inherit it, and et cetera, or establish a trust. So this brought to mind, you had a story about elder abuse, and it's kind of prevalent now.
Well, in our society, with aging society, we are seeing more and more cases of elder abuse, period, and in the real estate sector, financial elder abuse. And what's the story that I heard, we weren't involved directly. Well, there's a couple. One of them was a loan that was made by an elder person at the urging of a caregiver or family member. And the money was going all into the pocket of that unscrupulous family member or caregiver. And
so they encouraged a woman to put a second or a first on her home.
Yes.
To get
as a matter of fact, this is an actual story out of county. As it turned out that mom's mental capacity wasn't really there. And as a matter of fact, that was a title claim that was paid by a title insurance company down in, I think, the Los Angeles area. When it was brought to their attention that capacity was in question to make the lien an invalid lien, then they came through and covered on that policy based on that capacity issue that I talked about earlier.
Yeah, but when you go in to sign loan documents and get title insurance, you don't have to bring a note from a medical doctor how are you supposed to know if someone's incapacitated?
We're not physicians. We don't know. And I, not knowing the exact particulars of what happened in that case, they were obviously able to get her before a notary or somehow get a notary stamp or forge the document. I don't know the particulars. Or maybe on a good day you go in and sign the document and a notary or an escrow assistant or escrow officer wouldn't think to ask or question it, not knowing any better. I mean, if they look,
yeah,
who knows?
So this person, what was the reason for getting the loan? It was ostensibly to benefit the woman.
Well, in that example, it was just encouraging mom to go get a loan. I have heard another story which is a true story, mom is encouraged to encumber. I use mom as an example. Elder parent is encouraged to encumber their home. The story was, if you borrow the money, then I'll improve mine and build a second story on, and then you'll be able to move in, mom, and everything will be terrific. And as you get older, well, it all happened, but the second part didn't. So mom's left with an encumbered home, and all the benefit of the money went to someone other than mom, which is a classic case of financial abuse on Elder. I happened to sit in on as a member of what they call the FAST team, Financial Abuse Specialist Team, which is sponsored by the Central Coast Commission for Senior Citizens. Huh. And what that is, it's a group of professionals from governmental and private industry. There's law enforcement, the IRS, tax collectors, lenders, lawyers, estate planners, social services, adult protective services, a whole group of professionals. And we discuss and talk about circumstances and cases where there is financial abuse on elders suspected. And we give each other advice and information as best we can to help, educate ourselves and help put into place systems that can prevent future abuse. But it is something that we're having to be more and more aware of in this society today.
Well, it's good to know. It's good to know you're staying on top of things. Randy Sutton, Chief Title Officer, First American Title, thanks so much for being here today.
I'm happy to come. Thanks for having me.
It was fun. I guess your limo is outside.
That it is.
I know, so you got a nice expense account there, First American Title. Just kidding. I'll leave you with this question. I've been trying to figure this out. Back in 1803, it was in April, the U.S. purchased the Louisiana Territory from France, okay? The equivalent of about $15 million, okay? April of 1803. And then I was reading 7 months later, in November of 1803, it says Spain completed the process of ceding Louisiana to France, which had sold it to the United States. Now, can you explain that?
I'll give you a best guess. After acquired title, if it was given on a grant deed, then the title would have passed through to the ultimate purchaser based on the after acquired title theory. How's that for a wild guess?
Well, you know what? It's such a good guess. I'll have to listen to the tape because I don't think I understood it. But you could be right. I wonder if there's a way to actually find that out.
I don't know about that.
I was just thinking, I was wondering why Spain just didn't simply sell it directly to the U.S. If they had title all along, why did they allow the markup to go to France?
Got me, man.
Buying and selling. But that's the best answer yet. Randy Sutton, First American Title, thanks for being here.
You're welcome. Glad to be here. Thanks.
Mark Schneidman's Radio Real Estate. You stay tuned for the fourth and final segment, unless we go into overtime. We have a sportscaster here helping us with the board, so maybe we can finally go into overtime. And we'll discuss the weekly sales update, median prices, weekly MLS sales update. Mark Schneidman's Radio Real Estate. Stay tuned. You'll be right back.